So here we are. It's the fourth quarter and just like a few weeks left in 2018. We have absolutely no time for deals to just like kind of go at a snail's pace or stall out or certainly any of that, like call me back after the holidays nonsense. So today we're going to talk about how to keep your deals moving forward and how to even create a renewed sense of momentum in the deals that you're working on now. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, I feel like I owe everybody an explanation for not being here last week. I mean, there was no Sales Playbook Podcast last week. In fact, some of you love me so much that you were emailing me asking if I was okay. I was okay. I was actually hanging out on a cruise with Mrs. Uncle Paul celebrating our 30th anniversary. And when I went into this cruise, I was uneasy about one thing, and it was this idea of having a week being totally unplugged. Because if you've ever taken a cruise, you know that, first of all, the wireless on those boats not only suck, but it's overpriced. I mean, it's just nutty expensive. And if I'm going to like drop a lot of money in something, better have alcohol in it, number one. Number two, you know that there's just about like no coverage out in the middle of the ocean. So I had this like entire week being unplugged. And, you know, surprisingly enough, at the end of the week, Castain Training Systems like hadn't burnt to the ground and like, you know, like all kinds of devastation and like that scene of like the end of like, remember Gone with the Wind and the South was all burned and destroyed and everything. It was still here, man. And like, sometimes I think we just got to slow down. But anyway, I'm kind of violating my rule on my podcast of like no dicking around. You know, like these people that have the podcast and they don't get down to business. And here I am talking about my damn wedding anniversary and sailing around. But I just felt that I owed you guys an explanation. Not really. I just want to kind of brag about getting out to Bermuda, truth be told. But anyway, so our topic today is, you know, how do we keep our deals moving forward and possibly even get that renewed sense of momentum? So what we're going to do is think about the things that keep our deals from moving forward. In fact, that's one of the things that I would invite you to do. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that I'm a really big advocate of carving out some thinking time. And the thinking time really has to be done outside of office hours. I mean, because imagine like your boss comes over to you and like there you are, like dazed out, like for like a half an hour, just like looking like you're stoned or something. The boss is probably going to have you drug tested. But like, I mean, seriously, I mean, you're not going to get stuff done if you're thinking about stuff during game time. You should be playing the game during game time. But after hours, I'm a big advocate of, I especially like to go outside. You guys know I'm a big cigar smoker. Grab a nice stick, get outside, maybe an adult beverage. And I ponder different things that affect my business and even things about myself that might be limiting me so that I can continue to be that humble student of sales that I think all of us really need to be. So one of the things that I want you to think about, I want you to think about the things that keep your deals from moving forward. Now, I'm going to make it easy for you and I'm going to give you a bunch of things. I probably have, let me think. I'm not even going to tell you how many, because if I tell you how many things I have for you, you might haul ass out of here right now. I can't bother with that, man. This is like going to be too deep today with Castain. You know, I'd rather he talk about his damn cruise. But anyway, so I'm going to throw these at you in the form of questions. Now, when I ask you these questions, I mean, certainly, don't answer them, man, because I'm not even there. You're going to be talking to yourself. That looks pretty like, I don't know, it just looks weird. The other thing, too, is that just realize that when I'm asking these questions, I'm not accusing you. I think there's a lot of sales trainers out there, certainly ones that I come across on LinkedIn in these group forums, and they're like saying these things almost in a way like the sales rep screwed up, almost like a parent questioning their child, like, oh, what did you do? You know, you showed bad judgment. And they probably would sound like that, right? Just like that. the way that I said it. So I'm not asking you these things to put you on the spot and make you feel bad. I'm asking these questions of you to get you to think about your deals. So the best thing you can do as we go along is kind of answer them openly and honestly, again, to yourself, not out loud. So here goes the first one. Have you been meeting with someone who actually has the urgency to change now? So let me say that again. Have you been meeting with someone? I want you to think about the deals that you're working on. And if you'd rather go about this from deals that maybe are not moving forward as quickly as you want, however way you want to attack these questions to help you. But really you have to answer the question, are you meeting with someone who has the urgency to change now? One of the things that I ask right at like the very beginning, and yes, it's a qualifying question. One of the questions I ask is, I know that I'm jumping ahead quite a few steps, but I just need to ask you, ideally, when are you looking to make a change? Ideally, when are you looking to make a change? I mean, you know, we avoid questions sometimes in sales because we just don't, we can't handle the answer, right? It's like that thing, you can't handle the truth. We have to be able to handle the truth, especially when we don't have a hell of a lot of time left in 2018. So I'd rather know at the very beginning that I'm dealing with someone who's just doing some preliminary work for something that like they might get around to in the spring or maybe the fall of 2019 versus somebody who knows they need to like get moving on this now. So that's your first little bit of soul searching. Are you meeting with someone who has the urgency to change now? And if you're not sure, my question to you would be, well, have you asked? Right? You're not going to say, well, do you have the urgency to change now? Are you jerking me around, Miss Prospect? We're not going to do that, but maybe ask the question that I gave you. Next, have you been getting the right people into your meetings? Have you been getting the right people into your meetings? And my question to you, again, I'm going to be asking you some tough questions today. Have you actually asked? And have you asked more than once? Because a lot of the time, we ask once when we're setting the appointment, and then somebody either respectfully or quite dickishly shuts that down. And then we never ask again. And the shame of that is that at the time when we're asking for the appointment, we usually haven't built the credibility and the rapport and the trust to gain access to those other people. So if you're just stopping after that first ask, I would invite you to ask more often. And I would never be afraid of asking someone for access to someone else. I think you just need to ask in a way that's very, very professional. And just very, very quickly, the way that I teach my students to ask is to simply say, who else besides yourself should join us? And there's a little trick that I do after that, but I can't give it all away, folks. I'm sorry. But anyway, the next thing that I want you to think about is, have you established the proper environment? Have you established the proper environment? So if I were to define that for you, because you might be like, well, like, where's he going with that? You know, my definition of the proper environment, it's a mutual type of thing where we can each, prospect and sales rep, have an environment where we're free to ask questions. We can brainstorm. And also my favorite is that we've been given the proper amount of time to do so. And, you know, we love to give these like doctor's analogies in sales all the time, but I really stand behind some of them because I think that they're very, very accurate. I mean, imagine going to your doctor and saying, listen, I have great news for you, doc. This is going to be real easy for you. I've determined that, you know, I'm on the verge of just a massive heart attack. And, you know, I just think that we just need to go ahead and schedule a triple bypass. But first, what's your best price on it? Because I'm going to be shopping it. And, you know, like, would that doctor go along with that? I mean, like, we sit here and you know, you laugh at that or you say, well, that's a ridiculous example. But not really, because we allow it in the sales world. And if a doctor went ahead and did that, that would be malpractice. Well, here it's sales malpractice. So sometimes we have these environments where people are telling us exactly what they want, and they're not allowing us to ask questions, or on the surface they're saying that they're allowing questions, but they're getting very defensive. They're not being very, very open. They're not sharing things. They're not helping us to help them. And also, the other thing to me that happens, and I'm sure you've been there, it's actually a scenario that scares the hell out of me. Those scenarios where it's like very similar to that crazy doctor analogy that I gave you, where somebody is saying, hey, listen, I know exactly what I want. You know, I want you to work up a price for me on this, this, and this. And it's like they're like, on the surface, it can be misleading. It's like, oh, wow, they seem really interesting. You know, interesting. They seem really interested. They know exactly what they want. This is going to save time and everything else. Well, you're a professional. So I would be very, very careful of it. But again, it's very important that we've been given the right amount of time and that we have a situation where it's a collaborative relationship. And that's what I strive for, a collaborative relationship. Not one where I'm trying to pitch you and manipulate you. And certainly not one where then, you know, we're playing cat and mouse and I'm chasing you. But we need an environment that's open and honest and that we can each ask questions and expect the other one to be very transparent. So I want you to think about that as well. Did you establish rapport, credibility, and trust? Let me say it again. And by the way, this is going to be like a little bit of a trick question here. I'm going to warn you. Because I got a left hook coming at you, which isn't much of a left hook if I kind of told you, right? It's kind of like, I'm going to throw a punch in a minute, right? Anyway, so silly me. So did you establish rapport, credibility, and trust? Well, like, how did you do it? How do you know? Like, how did you do it? There's a lot of people out there, and I really wish that people would change their thinking on this. There's a lot of people out there that when you mention, especially to hear the word rapport, the thinking right away, that's the chit-chat. And that's maybe finding things in common or talking about things that are of interest to the other person. Or you're sitting across from a potential client and you notice they're into fishing. Or in my case, you notice that, like, you know, they love cigars. Like, I don't know how the hell you would notice that because people can't smoke in their offices anymore. I don't know, like, if there's, like, some kind of, like, a secret sign, a symbol that a cigar smoker... We should have that, by the way. In fact, that's what this podcast should be about today. The need to have a secret symbol that says, yes, I indulge in a good cigar. And then we know this, and then we can do business with like-minded people. Never mind, I'm out of here today. I'm going to get to work on that instead of teaching you guys some good shit. But anyway, seriously... But, you know, like, you know, it's not just about, I mean, those things are great, don't get me wrong, but they're also very, very typical to go at it that way, and that's not, like, a real deep sense of developing, you know, credibility and trust. I mean, you might have a little bit of rapport with them, but there's some better ways. Like, how about, like, asking really, really good questions? How about providing evidence? When you're making a statement, you're not just saying something, you're proving it to them. Like maybe by using some facts, or maybe like providing examples, samples of things, providing stories and case studies, maybe a before and after picture, that type of thing, testimonials. But also too, expertise, right? When it comes to like demonstrating your expertise, right? That's part of the whole rapport, credibility, and trust thing. When, like, are you truly demonstrating your expertise? Or have you been focused just on the company? Yeah, and of the widget, like, the widget's ability to, like, provide a solution for them. That's important stuff. Do it. Keep doing that. But what about you? Like, are you... Because you're the differentiator here, if you think about it. You know, a good widget can be replicated somewhere else. I mean, even if, like, you have a patent on it, I mean, how long before that runs out and then, you know, everybody can kind of do it, or there's a knockoff product or whatever else, but you can't be duplicated. So you have to be a part of the equation. You have to be brought to every, like, interaction, and, like, you also have to, like, put that whole like Eunice out there throughout every like stage of this courtship. And I'm not just talking about with cute stuff and rapport and everything else, but like I just want you to understand people are judging you. And if you have the expertise, man, you need to be like providing that to them, and you need to be teaching them things along the way and steering them away from things that could hurt them or keep them from achieving the things that you've discovered that they want to achieve. The next thing, and I kind of alluded to this in the last one, did you, or at least like, have you been asking kick-ass questions? The mistake that a lot of sales reps make is that they are like focusing too much on informational spec related types of questions. Let me say it again. The mistake that a lot of sales rep make or are making is that they focus too much on informational type of spec related questions, the colors and the sizes and the quantity, logistical things. Those things are important. There's no doubt. We have to ask those questions. But we all know, or we should know, that part of the reasons like why we ask kick-ass questions, it's not just to get the information. It's to get people emotionally charged up enough so that that momentum just kind of gets fueled and it kind of picks up and we keep moving toward things and that we're kind of creating a deeper sense of urgency, right? Or we're deepening that sense of urgency they already had. Well, people aren't going to get very, very excited about a spec-related question unless you're truly offering something to them in the specs that no other company has the capabilities of doing. Then they're going to get excited. You're the only one who could do that size or that color or that quantity or maybe in that timeline or whatever. But for everybody else, the other 99.9% of the people listening to this, people aren't going to get excited about that stuff. So you need to ask the questions that are going to get people excited. Now, something else that I just want to add in there, especially because it's the fourth quarter, when we talk about asking kick-ass questions, I mean, are you asking the ballsy questions? When I say ask a ballsy question, that's not a license for you to be rude or for you to just like really annoy somebody or be out of line or inappropriate. But how many times have we been in a meeting and we notice something? And something needs to be asked, but we hold back because we feel like we're going to offend somebody. Hey, listen, I'm going to put myself out there and tell you. I had this happen. I always have this happen. But last week, I had two scenarios. And two of these opportunities were just taking a bit longer than they should have. And what happened was one person, with both of them, I kind of determined, I was like, man, you know, like I was kind of going through this little checklist that I'm going through with you guys, and I realized that my questions could have been a little bit better. And in both cases, there were things that I should have said that I didn't because I was worried about either offending somebody or getting them pissed off or whatever it is. So, you know, I avoided the ballsy questions. So, two opportunities that I had like this. So, last week I decided, you know, I just have a feeling that, you know, it's kind of like these are going nowhere. And I kind of had the feeling that they both like maybe made up their mind already, but just didn't tell me because they didn't want to hurt my feelings, which is the worst thing. Because now I'm actually taking more time courting somebody who's just not into me, that isn't ultimately going to marry me, that they knew it already, but they're just trying, you know, to do the right thing, whatever the hell they think they're doing. So I just kind of like put it out there. And I asked the ballsy questions I should have. Now, usually right about now when a sales trainer tells you a war story, right? You're going to hear how they won the day and they kick ass and they're the best or whatever it is. One of the people, I think if I would have asked him face to face, I really think, I pissed this guy off so bad. I think he would have took a swing at me. I mean, and the best part, this was hysterical. Like, I mean, this was like the weirdest, funniest, oddest situation I've ever been in. I even prefaced and said, hey man, you know, I'm going to offer a little tough love now. I got to ask the question. Forgive me, but... And I asked the question. It wasn't rude. It wasn't a nasty question, but it was just something that needed to be asked. And he got really shitty. I mean, he raised his voice. He's yelling at me and everything. He didn't say, like, how dare you or anything like that. But he got really shitty. And the best part of it is, like, I even was a gentleman. I said, listen, man, I think I've obviously offended you. But the question needed to be asked. Oh, no, this is business. And, you know, we have to ask this. And he's yelling at me while he's saying that shit. So anyway, it was kind of a gift to me. Because what I did was, another salesperson might try to win them over and everything. I really don't have time for that. Especially I'm really not going to spend a lot of time with somebody who doesn't love me, and I have to, like, get them to learn to love me and all that. Especially in the fourth quarter, because I'd rather be spending my time with others. But I don't want to burn the bridge, and I don't want to slam the door shut on this guy. So I respectfully exited from that conversation. And in the other scenario, this guy really liked the fact that I called him out on some stuff. And it was for a coaching relationship. And he said, none of the coaches I've had in the past have had the balls to ask me that question and kind of hold me accountable when I started to hesitate and push back on you for asking that ballsy question. And, you know, I nailed the deal. So part of asking kick-ass questions is your willingness to tactfully ask the questions that your competitors don't have the balls to ask. Next, because I think we spent more than enough time on that one. Next, did you properly educate your... You know what? Actually, I'm sorry. I do want to go back for a second. How's this? Yeah, and I'm not going to edit out. Like, another guy like would edit this out. I'm not. I'm not going to spend all the time. There is one other thing I want to say about asking kick-ass questions. Another mistake that people make is they spend too much time looking for the pain. Looking for the pain is very, very important. And when it comes to motivation to make a change in your life, you will make a change like 100 times quicker when there's pain attached to it versus something that you're going toward, like an opportunity or something that's pleasurable. So given the two, it's always going to be pain. But what if, like, pain doesn't exist and you're asking questions, you're leaving no stone unturned? And yet, like, everything you're asking, no, man, we're good there. And you know that they're being honest, and you've done research, and it all kind of checks out and everything. If you only focus on the pain, you leave that opportunity with a whole lot of nothing. And that might be another reason why your opportunity, if you will, or this particular prospect didn't move forward, because there was no pain and everything you were talking to them about was focusing on pain and searching for pain that didn't exist. It would be almost like if, like, you went to the doctor and you didn't have anything that was painful. Right? I mean, you know, like, they can't make up shit and say, well, you know, I mean, I think, you know what, actually, it's been my experience that people who come in here, you know, automatically need a triple bypass. There I go with that damn triple bypass. But anyway, so let's now go to the next one. Did you properly educate your prospect on not only your widget, but how to properly buy that type of widget in general? So a lot of the time, when we're presenting our solution to a potential client, what do? We talk about all the bells and the whistles. And if we're a good salesperson, we're marrying that in with the needs that were expressed, right? You know, Mr. Jones, and I wouldn't call somebody Mr. Jones, especially if it was a chick. I wouldn't do that because she probably wouldn't like that too much. But, you know, if I'm sitting here and I said, you know, hey, Bob, one of the things you said to me was that this was a concern for you. Hey, you know, with my on-site training program, we're able to do this, this, and this, and this is how we do it. That's important that you do that. But you also have to do something else. You also have to teach people how to properly buy your widget. Because a lot of the time, do you agree with this statement? Don't answer out loud, because again, it'd be weird. But do you agree with this philosophy that sometimes people don't know how to buy your product or service properly? And if you think I'm kidding, this goes into a lot of people just thinking that it's a commodity, or thinking, well, the way to do it properly is that I will get three bids, or I'll just go for the lowest price. Or, you know, we're going to hire this consultant that we put together, this really, really thorough RFP. And meanwhile, because this consultant wants to earn all their money, this nutty amount of money that they're going to get for doing that, they put things on there that are just short of asking a potential vendor to provide, like, you know, a blood and urine specimen. I mean, it's, like, idiotic, some of the shit that's on these RFPs. So But I think people need to be educated on how to buy. And there's a lot of ways that you can do it. One of the things that I did, by the way, is that because one of the products that I sell is a coaching product, a one-on-one coaching package where, it's like a six-month program that I have. But there's a million coaches out there. So what I did was I put together a guide on how to hire a sales coach. The questions that you should be asking a potential sales coach, the things that you should be looking into in terms of their background, because we're not all created equal. So I put together, and by the way, if anybody wants that guide, if you shoot me an email, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com, I'd be happy to send that to you. But I mean, I don't stop there. There's lots of ways that I educate people. This time of year, I have a lot of people reaching out to me who want to hire me as, or like at least investigate hiring me to be their sales kickoff speaker in January or February, and in some cases even March. And there's a lot of people out there doing what I do. And there are some things that I teach potential clients so that they can avoid making the mistake. And it's always done in the spirit of whoever you choose. That's your choice, man. I'm not here to question your choice, but I'm here to help you to make the right decision. And here are some things that I've seen out there that could really, like, absolutely ruin your sales kickoff meeting. So here's some things that you need to look for. Here's some things that are non-negotiable for you. So there's lots of ways that we can educate people along the way. But when it comes to educating a prospect, you need to think beyond the actual product or the actual service. You need to talk about how can I help them make the best decision? Because especially when people are delaying, there's that uncertainty. We want to get them into more like the certainty zone. So one of the ways that we can do it is by equipping them with the knowledge so that they can make a better decision and a quicker decision too, because now they're armed with the tools to do it right. Next, did you properly disqualify your competitors without bad-mouthing them? You're allowed to disqualify your competitors without bad-mouthing them, and you should be. I mean, and by the way, I want to let you know, I guarantee you the opposite has happened to you multiple times in your sales career. It's happened to all of us, where all of a sudden you get the feeling like somebody's been whispering in your prospect's ear, and now you're playing a defensive game. Now, you can do that too, but the way for you to do it is by not bad-mouthing your competitors. A lot of people, when I ask the question, okay, did you disqualify your competitors? And I'm going to be a little bit creative with my language now. I'm going to tell you what people say to me. So again, I mean, by now you've heard me curse a few times. So maybe earmuffs or something. But I'll ask you, did you disqualify your competitor? Yeah, I don't want to be a dick like that. You're not being a dick when you do that. There's ways for you to educate the buyer to make the best decision. And that's not me sugarcoating you being a dick, by the way. There's ways for you to disqualify them without you being unprofessional. But anyway, next, did you present the right solutions and ask for feedback? See, that's how you know if you presented the right solutions. So did you present the right solutions and ask for feedback? There is one question that I think is the ultimate sales question that you need to have in your arsenal. It is so damn good that I'm ashamed of myself for not being the person who thought of it. Seriously, I'm ripping this off with full accolades to the people at Spin Selling because, as you know, Spin Selling is an acronym, and the N stands for the need payoff question. The need payoff question. What's really cool about the need payoff question is that it can actually be both a trial close and a closing question. So the way for you to know if you've presented the right solution is to ask the following type of question. You could tweak it for your style and your potential client, your personality, but here's the gist of it. I like to start off the question by kind of summarizing something they said to me. So I might say something like, Mary, when we first got together, one of the things that you mentioned to me that's just like non-negotiable is that you need a sales trainer who can do this one particular thing, or maybe A, B, and C. In what ways do you feel that the program that I presented to you can accomplish that? Or how do you see the program that I put together for on-site training, follow-up coaching, online training, so on and so forth? How do you see that addressing the challenges you've been having? Or how do you see that addressing the concerns you had or the request that you had of me? Then you shut up, and one of two things is going to happen. They're either going to answer in the affirmative. If they answer in the affirmative, there is no closing required at this point. They have closed themselves. They have given the reason, and they have justified it to themselves. It's kind of like you hear yourself talking, hear yourself saying something. They've bought it in that moment. But a lot of people say to me, well, wouldn't it suck if they say, well, actually, Paul, I don't see it like addressing these things. I don't think it would suck at all. I think it's freaking awesome. Not as good as somebody saying like all these things in the affirmative, but I think it's freaking awesome if they say, actually, no, Paul. I mean, I love that. I get excited over that too. Why? Because I now have a fighting chance to go back in and try to fill in the gaps and find out where the disconnect was. I can ask more questions. I have another shot. Again, I think it comes down to the fact that many times we avoid the questions that we don't want the answers to. So we might be avoiding something like this because we don't want to hear them say, well, actually, I think your program sucks. I want you to say that to me. I mean, I want you to be a little nicer about it, but I mean, isn't that a lot better than us like shaking hands and you telling me like that was a great presentation? Don't you love that when somebody like, it's almost like you did a performance, like you just did a comedy routine. Oh, that was funny as hell. That was a great performance, casting. Great. So you're going to buy dick? You're gonna basically not buying anything? We're evaluating like I'm on Netflix here and you're going to give me what, like 4 out of 5 stars, but you're not going to purchase it, right? So I would rather get good, honest feedback from you that I have a fighting chance to remedy then continue on in a sales process kidding myself. And I think you'd appreciate that too, because if God forbid now, that I just can't address those areas, well, I'm saving your time too, because now you don't have to have me following up and annoying you, because I am going to be annoying you. Not because it's like I'm an annoying guy, but because I'm doing my job. I'm going to be following up and see if there's additional questions. But if you've got to that point where, no, you don't feel that this is going to be a match, and there's nothing I can do at that point to like get you over to my side of the fence, I think I'm doing a disservice keeping that particular relationship going in the manner that we did before. Nothing wrong with putting it on the back burner. Nothing wrong with acknowledging, hey, things change. Let's revisit this again in the future. But why should we kid ourselves? So next, the next thing I want you to think about is, did you present your solutions uniquely, or did you do it pretty much like the same way your competitors did? Let me say it again. Did you present your solutions uniquely, or was it kind of pretty much standard presentation for your industry the way everybody else does it? You know, a few weeks ago on the podcast here, I don't remember which one it was, but I would guess whatever number this is, because I'm losing track, man. Whatever number this podcast is, I bet you if you went back like 3, you'd probably find the one I'm talking about, maybe 2, but probably 2 to 3 earlier than this. Probably something that I did back in September, I'm guessing. But I talked about this guy who was the number 2 sales rep worldwide, that when I made the decision, when I was ranked 60th worldwide out of 375 reps, I was like, man, I want to get into my first year. It was my first year on the job. I want to get into the top 20 this year. I want to end the year like being ranked in the top 20. So one of the things you do when you want to get better at something that accelerates your results is you can do something called modeling. Look at the people who are getting the results that you want, and instead of reinventing the wheel, find out how they did it, like as Tony Robbins would say, success leaves clues, and just kind of like pick up their playbook and run some of those plays and modify them for your style and personality. Well, this guy I work with, Tom, he did something really cool in his presentations that separated him from everyone else, and I've been doing it ever since. This was like, geez, man, this was like 21 years ago. I watched him with complete, like, my jaw was dropped, man. Like, I have a really bad poker face, so I'm sure, like, my jaw was dropped. I was, like, freaking drooling on the conference table and everything else, man. I mean, I never saw anything like this. What he did was, he didn't just present the parts of our program that were relevant to the recipient, you know, based on the needs analysis. What he did was, because we were offering a service, he was taking those things which were intangible, he made them, like, tangible by having a sample to kind of put a face on it, and so that people could look at that and say, okay, so that's what that would look like. So if he was talking about the fact that our cleaners, it was a cleaning company, were highly trained, when he talked about the training they went through, he showed, like, all the DVDs that they get in the program. He showed a flow chart of the two-week training program, what was covered. He brought one of, like, the three binders that they go through during this course. He brought the test that these cleaners would have to take and score a 75% or better. It was 100 questions. He brought stories with him about how he went through that training program and flunked the bathroom cleaning portion and had to go back again and do that. Like, they wouldn't give him a pass on that. And we had, like, this 12-point restroom cleaning program. So that's, like, how you separate yourselves from, like, yourself from, or if you have multiple personalities, yourselves, how, like, you can separate yourself from, like, everyone else out there. There's a lot of industries, and I'm not here to pick on, like, software, but software is one of them, where it's, like, the standard pitch that people have, and they all do it in the same way. It is loaded with technical shit, and that stuff is important. Don't get me wrong, but somewhere, it sounds like I'm getting emotional about it, man. I'm coughing. In fact, let me mute this for a second so I don't, like, really irritate you. Man, thank God I muted that, man. You'd think, like, oh my God, like, Castain might have died during that podcast. No, I'm sorry, man. My allergies act up really, really bad. I don't even remember what the hell I was talking about. That's, like, how bad this was, man. I'm just, like, passed the hell out while I was doing this. But, no, so you get these industries, like software and stuff, and it's, like, standard that you show up and you pitch in the same way. You load it with all this technical stuff and everything else. Now, I mean, who says that you can't marry in a little bit of fluff in there, right? Or showmanship or showwomanship. I mean, it doesn't always have to be this technical, boring type of presentation. And don't kid yourself into thinking that. There are two extremes, the way I see it, when it comes to, like, presentations and demos. We have the one extreme where we're just sticking to the plan and we're just presenting technical things. That, to me, can be very, very boring. But then you have the other side of it, and I think a lot, I mentioned before, sales kickoff meetings. I mean, like, how many times have you gone to, like, a sales kickoff meeting or a training? The guy up there thinks he's, like, a wannabe Tony Robbins, Mr. Motivation, but, you know, like, real dynamic personality, and they're saying phrases like, I don't say this to impress you, I say this to impress upon you, blah, 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 blah. And meanwhile, you say that, you know, this person has taught me nothing, but they made me feel really good for 45 minutes, but they have taught me nothing. So those are the two extremes, but, like, you need both. You need to be entertaining, but, like, at the end of that, like, entertainment, people have to have a takeaway. They have to know that there is substance, something that they can sink their teeth into. Next. Did you have, or do you have, and I want you to, if you're not driving, man, this is going to be an important one for you to jot down. Do you have a follow-up communication sequence? Let me say it again. Do you have a follow-up communication sequence? And more specifically, one that isn't reliant on, I'm calling to check in, I'm calling to follow up. I wanted to touch base with you. I wanted to circle back. All those kind of cliched things that just, to me, there is no value in that communication. Have you created a follow-up communication plan? Next, have you been assigning homework throughout the sales process? Now, let me say it again. Have you been assigning homework? See, the way that we assign homework is that we start with us and we say, well, Mr. Prospect or Miss Prospect, I have my homework cut out for me. You had asked for a copy of this. You wanted information on that. And you wanted my TPS reports. Now, fair's fair. I have some homework for you. In order for me to be able to put together a proposal, could you get me that information from whatever, the TPS department? Could you do this? Could you do that or whatever? And then you put timelines on it so that this stuff isn't like, you know, something you say amen, like a prayer, man. Like, it's like real. We put timelines because when you put timelines on it, to me, it's real. And now there's accountability. So is it reasonable to assume that you'd be able to get those to me no later than Tuesday? Yep, I'm in. Okay, great. Things I promised you, you will also have those by Tuesday, by the way. So it's very, very important. But see, there's something else here. Have you been holding people accountable? So if, see, what happens many times is that people like potential clients, prospects and all, they will ask us to do certain things and then we provide it for them. But we ask them to do certain things and it's okay for them to go offline. So again, I want to be clear. This isn't a license for you to be a jerk. But I'm here to tell you that you have absolute permission to judge people back. They are looking across that desk and they are judging you as to whether or not this is going to be a good fit. You absolutely need to do the same. And this isn't a matter of ego or getting your little feelings hurt. This is a matter of if they are requiring you to jump through all these hoops and they are not doing it, then you need to have a come to Jesus meeting with them. Seriously, you do. But the beauty of homework is that we have accountability and it could tell us the exact moment when somebody is becoming disengaged. But actually, let's back up and be a little more positive. It actually creates a situation where people are highly engaged, because when you're in the meeting, you're okay, man, unless you're really like putting your foot in your mouth, you're okay. And you're getting the maximum amount of their attention possible that you could possibly get in this world, right? But the minute that meeting is over, you don't have the same ability to get their attention. So the beautiful thing about homework is that when they're doing that homework, guess who they're thinking about? They're thinking about you. They're thinking about your company. Also, they have an opportunity to roll up their sleeves and see what it's like to work alongside of you. Hey, do you remember what I said earlier about the importance of establishing a collaborative relationship? This is another way that you do it. But what's beautiful about a collaborative relationship is that you're equals. There's no buyer. There's no seller. There's equals. And I think when we have that kind of dynamic, it becomes harder for us to stall out. So I want you to think about that. But anyway, next, did you repeat key points in different ways several times throughout the entire process, not just the demo, not just the meeting, not just that WebEx that you had, not just that Skype call or that conference call that you had? Let me say it again. Did you repeat key points in different ways several times throughout the process? So, you know, very quickly, you know, we're no longer living in a world where we can say things once and it sticks. Seriously. We are at the point of human history where we have the lowest attention span ever. And you know, it's interesting because people have disputed this, so I just don't, and not just with me, I mean just in general, but I used to always talk about this thing that the BBC put out. They put it out in 2010, and I can't imagine it got better since then. I think it could only have gotten worse. But they found with this study that they did, they put out a report where they found that the attention span of the human race is now at about, I think, like 8 seconds or something like that. Maybe it's 9 seconds, but close enough. But here's the part of it that I thought was really interesting. And I think it might have been, it was either Sally Hogshead or Anne Hanley who might have said, I think it was Anne Hanley who said this, now that I think of it, that 100 years ago, the attention span wasn't 8 or 9 seconds. I think it was like 10 or 20 minutes. I'm not kidding you. It was like 10 or 20 minutes. Could you imagine living in a world where like you get someone's undivided attention for 10 or 20 minutes, and it's understandable. I mean, what kind of exciting shit did they have 100 years ago? Like, go cow tipping or something? I mean, right? Like, what the hell would you... They weren't checking cell phones, that's for sure. They weren't playing on the internet. Like, hold on, man. I gotta go post this to my Instagram. I gotta, you know, like, go on Snapchat or something. So, but we're no longer living in a world where we could say things once and it sticks. So we have to embrace, I call it, and it's not my phrase, it's called theme and variation. It's actually an improvisation technique where you have a theme and you're going to vary that theme so you don't seem repetitious. So it's like you're embracing repetition without being repetitious. So let me give you an example. Let's just say that one of the selling points that you want to get out there is your level of expertise, man. You've got a lot of industry experience, and therefore you've been able to keep your clients from making a lot of bad mistakes, and you've been able to advise them in ways that have really impacted their business. So you're able to bring this total relationship to the party. You don't say that just once. You don't say that once during that demo, whatever it is. You have to think about, okay, that's my theme. How am I going to keep showing up with that theme, but in different ways so it doesn't seem like the same tired phrase? Well, there's a lot of ways that you can do that. I mean, one of the ways that you could do it is you could provide your bio in with your proposal. You could also advise them and teach them every step of the way. Remember, we talked about that before. Educate them on how to make a better buying decision. You could have some content that you put together, 3 non-negotiable things you need to ask of any training vendor or whatever. But all of those things are a variation of the theme, which is your expertise and your ability. So have you been doing that? Have you been taking these key selling points, whatever they are, and not just going about it in a one-and-done fashion? And by the way, I think this plays into the thing I said earlier. Do you have a good follow-up communication plan? This should be a part of it. This is all a part of it. Because remember, we are no longer living in a world where we can say it once and expect for it to stick. Next, did you do anything throughout the sales process that kept you from being regarded as another Me Too sales rep, that you're just another Me Too sales rep, just looking the same as everybody else? Maybe there was something creative you could have done. Maybe there was something you could have done in your follow-up. Maybe you could have thanked them in a very different or a fun type of way. But I'll leave that one for you to maybe think about during your thinking time. Here's a silly question, but I gotta ask it. I mean, have you been asking for the business? Sometimes it gets awkward and it gets weird, or maybe we don't feel it's the right time or whatever, but, you know, did you like ask him for the business? If it became clear to you that your prospect was hesitant, did you respectfully ask them why they're hesitating? I mean, haven't we all had these situations where you're like, I could just feel this just going off track? Again, it's almost like a situation where I feel like they came like to the point of a decision 3 weeks ago, but they just haven't articulated it to me. So how can you kind of respectfully, like, you know, like say to them, hey, look, I sense that maybe you're going in a different direction. And just like, you know, is that the case? I mean, no harm, no foul. Well, yeah, it is. Well, can I ask why? Now, when you ask a question like that and you're asking them why, the worst possible thing you could do at that point then is not be able to handle their answer and get defensive. Because the minute you get defensive, what happens is you've conditioned them never to be honest with you again. Said another way, things will have gotten weird. And when things get weird, they're not going to take your call in the future. You are not positioning yourself for a future yes. And what's going to happen is now that no is a door slammed shut for all eternity. Why? Because it got weird. And now it's like stimulus response. Paul calls. Oh, yeah, that's weird. I don't want to take his call. And they blow it off and it will never go anywhere. Last but not least, we're not quite at this one yet, but in a few weeks we are, so it needs to be said. Like, have you thought out, like, what you're going to do when people start telling you, let's revisit this after the holidays? Do you have like a good question where you can respectfully ask them why or what will change after the holidays? You need also to have several compelling reasons why people need to change now versus after the holidays. And I think, you know, even moving away from the holidays, this is like relevant advice throughout the year, because I think we always have to have compelling reasons why now versus later. So you might want to think that out. So that's what I have for you today, man. I think we covered a lot. I gave you certainly a ton of stuff here. If you found value in this, I'm going to ask you right now something that, remember we said before, asking for the business? I want to ask you for two things if you found value in today's podcast. Number one, could you pass this along to your boss, to your coworkers, maybe even someone in your LinkedIn network, or maybe like just share it on LinkedIn, man. It would mean the world to me. The second thing is that if you said, wow, this was kind of a different like approach that I was taught today to closing more business, then you absolutely, folks, have to come join us on November 8th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be talking about how to expedite your deals before year end, right? Talk about very, very timely. Here's what we're going to cover. We're going to talk about 30 ways to find buyers with the urgency to change now, not after the holidays. Do you remember? That was like one of the first things I said to you. Do you have someone who has the urgency to change now? You might have been thinking, I don't, but how the hell do I do it? I got you covered. I got 30 ways to do it. We're going to talk about how to get the right players into your meetings, and I kind of have a definition of the right players that's a little counterintuitive, but it makes a big difference. We're going to talk about how to establish authority before the first meeting even has, how to disqualify your competitors without being unprofessional. That was another thing we talked about today. 12 insurance policies that you have to take out with every single prospect to keep your deals moving forward. 5 power phrases. This is a new thing that I'm introducing into a lot of my training. You're going to hear a lot of that in 2019. You're going to hear me talking a lot about power phrases, but I'm going to be sharing 5 power phrases that keep the deal moving forward. And they're not cheesy or your typical types of stuff. It's very, very different. And you're going to find that it kind of puts your prospect in a position where they think about things a little bit differently. We're going to talk about how to create a higher degree of urgency without cheesy lines, how to handle the price objection without giving away the store. And we're going to deal with stalls like, I need to think it over and let's revisit it after the holidays. To learn more, would you please visit YourSalesPlaybook.com/closemore. YourSalesPlaybook.com/closemore. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit our blog at YourSalesPlaybook.com/blog.